This week on Best in Show, we are weaponizing our femininity with May December writer Sammy Birch. And Ella Kemp and George Fenech are here with all the goss from the British Independent Film Awards. But first, let us tell you a little bit about Film Independent. It is now in its 39th year. The Film Independent Spirit Award celebrates the finest achievements in artist-driven film and television. Only Film Independent members vote to determine the winners.
So become a Film Independent member by Monday, December 18th to receive access to watch nominated films and series and vote. Join Film Independent, watch the nominees, vote for the Spirit Awards. Visit filmindependent.org/join to join, watch, vote.
I am Mia Lee Vicino, the West Coast editor here at Letterboxd, and Best in Show is all about award season. You know the deal. We meet this year's contenders, we get insider intelligence about the film ecosystem, and we dive into the Letterboxd data. But mostly, we do what we always do here at Letterboxd: celebrate cinema. And here to celebrate cinema with me are my Best in Show besties. Well, most of them. Our Hollywood veteran and editorial producer, Brian Formo, is currently doing fancy Critics' Choice things because he's a fancy, fancy Hollywood insider, which means sometimes we just can't get him into the studio because he's in a frickin' tuxedo somewhere. But we do have Editor-in-Chief Gemma Gracewood.
Hello, also in a tuxedo, but at home. Because why not?
Our London editor, Ella Kemp.
Good evening.
And our Best in Show newsletter editor, George Fenech.
Ahoy, sexy.
Ahoy, sexies and regular listeners. You'll already know we are huge, huge fans of May December, Todd Haynes' latest psychodrama starring Julianne Moore.
Psychodrama.
Starring Julianne Moore, Natalie Portman, and Gotham plus New York Film Critics Circle Award-winning supporting actor Charles Melton. So I am so, so excited to say that Gemma and I have an interview with screenwriter Sammy Birch coming up in this episode very soon.
Yes, so true. And speaking of Charles Melton, Mia, you know that we had a new feature drop on Letterboxd this week for patron members where you can choose which headshot, which profile picture of your favorite actors and directors you want to have at the top of your page. And I was like, Charles Melton, he's only got like two images here. That's not much of a choice. What did you do, Mia?
I saved Charles Melton. I did what nobody else could do.
So you're telling me that you jumped into tmdb.com, the movie database, and you added a few extra official images of Charles Melton to flesh out, to fill out the options. Is that what you're saying?
Tee-hee. That is part of our workday here at Letterboxd, is selecting the most beautiful pictures of Charles Melton to go on his TMDB, because that is where the data is imported from, and that's where beautiful, beautiful headshots come from.
I just want to know, how do you pick which picture of Hugh Grant? Moving on. We've got a lot of things to talk about. We've got the biffer to get to Sammy Birch. But before all of that, just a note that Film Independent dropped their 2024 Indie Spirit Award nominations this week. You can see all of the nominees on their Letterboxd HQ and in George's Best in Show newsletter. Both links are in our episode notes. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, you can vote if you become a Film Independent member by Monday, December 18th. So yeah, that's coming up.
All right, now let's get to the British Independent Film Awards, or BIFA, as we shall henceforth refer to them from now on. Ella, you were there. Why don't you give us a little bit of explanation about just what these awards are?
I was and I will. So these awards were created in 1998 by Raindance, which is the largest independent film festival in the UK. It's kind of like what the Independent Spirit Awards are to the Oscars, BIFA are to the BAFTAs, except the timeline is slightly different because we are now in December and the BAFTAs are not until the end of February at the earliest, depending on the year. But it's the same vibe, always a very fun time. There is a total sort of lack of hierarchy, it feels like, in terms of being there on the night. Everyone is celebrating the same thing, which is independently funded British filmmaking. So a beautiful example for the month of December. You will not see Wonka at the Biffers, but you will see Scrapper, and more on that shortly. So this year's ceremony took place last night at the time of recording, which was Sunday the 3rd of December in London. And myself and George and our colleague Tom Denson were also there. And it feels like bedtime soon.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We'll run through this quickly because it's like 8 p.m. in the UK and you guys have to rest. I would have to lay down for 3 days straight after doing all the work that you just did. So,
but George, I mean, the actual winners, I found them quite surprising, I would say. You know, because in terms of the nominees, it was interesting because you had films like Rye Lane that was nominated for 16 awards. How to Have Sex, directed by Molly Manning Walker, was nominated for 13 awards. I think Charlotte Regan's Scrapper was up for a similar thing. So you had a lot of, you know, very brilliant and very different films from debut female filmmakers that were nominated for loads. And then the wins didn't fully reflect that. It was not at all bad films that won whatsoever. But yeah, what did you make of it, George?
I mean, I feel like it's important to provide the context of how we were learning about the winners. Ella and I were in the sort of winners press area, and you couldn't hear anything that was going on, except for when we were able to duck behind this like strange little curtain and peek at the ceremony and still not really hear anything, but see the screens. So we were sort of doing it in like dribs and drabs and just like stealing it when we could. And yeah, it did seem really surprising early on. Obviously, it eventuated that it was basically a sweep for All of Us Strangers, which is great. They ended up taking the top prize and also obviously supporting for Paul. But then another surprise of the night that was shared with Sean Thomas from How to Have Sex, which is really, really cool. Yeah, so great to see that performance recognized, I think, because, you know, it was a tricky one, and the men in that film had a difficult job. And then obviously on How to Have Sex still, Mia McKenna-Bruce, the lead, who I think, you know, that was one of those ones where everyone in the UK that I've spoken to about that film was just so sure of that one. So I think that one, because the BIFFA also does non-gendered categories, it was unclear where that would go because of so many good performances. But
I mean, yeah, she was up against Andrew Scott for All of Us Strangers as well.
Yeah.
Like a kid from Tracy Beaker literally beat the Hot Priest.
We love an underdog.
Yeah. And what was particularly interesting about that win? So Mia McKenna-Bruce won Best Lead Performance. There is also a category for Best Breakthrough Performance, for which she was also nominated. So if anything, it kind of felt like she was a shoo-in for that because this is one of her first, if not her first, major film role. It was cool that the Best Breakthrough Performance went to Vivian O'Para, the lead actress in Rye Lane, who is amazing. And I also have to say, we first met Vivian on the carpet for Rye Lane in March in London. It was one of the first carpets we ever did here. It was pouring with rain. It was not, you know, we did what we could. But we spoke to her very briefly, and she was an absolute angel and a darling. And so it was so nice that last night she came up to us on the carpet. And, you know, you always want to stay humble. People have got things to do, places to be. You don't expect people to remember you. She just came up to us and just yelled like, "Oh my God, it's my favorite people." And I was like, "Well, hello." And she's amazing. And I think that's really deserved. And it was quite surprising, to be honest, I think, but in a good way.
Yeah. And then just to bring it back to our big winner, All of Us Strangers, one more time. What I thought was really interesting was how it swept with 7 awards, which was the same number that After Sun won last year, I believe. So go off, Paul, our BIFFA darling. And speaking of winner, outstanding supporting actor Paul Mescal, Ella, is it true? Are the rumors true? You had a sit-down conversation with Best in Show listener Paul Mescal for an upcoming podcast episode?
The people are talking. The people are talking. And, you know, as we are all aware, you know, Paul Mescal and I have both hung out with Ridley Scott. So when I walked into the room, I must say the first thing, he asked me for my notes. So, you know, we're on the same page. When you see his performance in Gladiator 2, you're welcome. You know, that was all me. Yes, it is true.
Ella Kemp.
It was all, that's what everybody's saying. But Paul and I, well, also it must be said, bless Paul Mescal. He is one of the only actors who couldn't make it over to the BIFFAs. And he has always spoken so beautifully about the importance and value of British independent filmmaking, as we know, with After Sun. And I know that he was devastated to not be there, not only because he won, but also, you know, because he was filming Gladiator 2. So yes, he was sorely missed. But we had a chat in London before he had to head back to filming. And we, you know, we really sort of dug into award season as we do on Best in Show. We talked about fashion, we talked about accents, and we talked about how it feels and what it's like on the other side of the red carpet velvet rope, you know, as much who and what Paul looks out for when he's walking these carpets. Spoiler, it's letterboxed. He's always looking for letterboxed. And, you know, got some tips on how to best enjoy award season.
Okay, that's... Ella, this is great insider intel because I'm going to be chatting with Paul Mescal for All of Us Strangers at the LA premiere tomorrow. So I was going to ask for tips anyway, aside from, of course, wearing one of the four Mitski shirts I own to start conversation.
Mia, I don't think I can provide any further tips beyond that because you are already crushing it. You can, however, gently and politely remind Paul that he has promised us a list, unranked, of his 20 favorite movies of all time. We have heard the man's four favorites many times, but we are all moving in the right direction to bring him more into the letterbox fold. And, you know, he was very excited and thrilled to be moving up the hierarchy of the film club. So, you know, and also if you manage to spot Anthony Hopkins, don't know why he'd be at the premiere.
Why would he be there? But hey, maybe so.
Why not? Do you know, why not? He is Paul's all-time favorite actor. And he also promised us that whenever he gets cast in a film with Anthony Hopkins, that's the moment he will reveal his Letterboxd account.
Okay, so we do need to get him.
The stakes are high, so do what you can, please.
I'll call him.
Thank you.
I have Anthony Hopkins' number. I'll just call
him. You
do. Well, thank you. It's been such a joy to have you on for our little Biffa segment. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
Absolutely. So I would like to shout out a film called Femme, which came out in the UK on the 1st of December, and it's coming out in the US in early 2024. It stars George Mackay and Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who both give incredible performances, which is why I was so pleased that they won the award for joint lead performance, which again, in a very stacked category, you know, they're up against Harris Dickinson and Lola Campbell for Scrapper. And, you know, they are fabulous. We got a chance to talk to them on the carpet, and you can expect their four faves coming soon. And we, as we've said, spoke to many, many people on the carpet. So just a little teaser of a few things we've got coming up. You can expect four favorites from Claire Foy, Jodie Comer, Stephen Graham, Rain Allen Miller, Paris Arcilla, a whole host of folks. And we've also got a major episode of Last Four Watch coming with Scrapper writer and director Charlotte Regan and star Lola Campbell, who both times we have spoken to her 6 months apart, the only thing that she has watched, does watch, will watch is EastEnders. So, you know, you've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
And one tiny extra thing that you can keep an ear out for that is honestly one of my favorite things about this award season and things generally. The actor Aisling Bea was at the Biffas last night and was presenting an award, and we were able to have a quick chat with her, which I was so thrilled about because I've noticed that whenever Aisling does any kind of any public event or appearance, she will always post, you know, photos of her outfits, as she should, on her Instagram afterwards. But Aisling is really committed to basically only wearing, where she can, pre-loved clothes and accessories on carpets and events. And she always gives very detailed descriptions of why she does it, where they're from, you know, what it means. And she just spoke really beautifully about that, about the way that, you know, you can wear stuff you've worn before at all of these events and you can also look amazing, which she does and did. So keep an ear out for that conversation. And yes, many, many, many more bits of Biffa content to come. Yes.
I also recycle my dresses for these red carpet things.
As
and
you
it's
should.
Definitely because of that and not because of budget reasons. Yes, that is the reason. Well, wonderful, wonderful final mentions, Ella. We'll move on to our final segment, Winner, Winner, Chicken Run Dinner, and we'll do it really quickly so you guys can go to bed. But will you please stick around for that segment?
Absolutely.
Yes, we will. We will.
Yes. Okay, so you guys go have real dinner yourselves and we'll see you in a little bit. In the meantime, Gemma, are we ready to go to Sammy Birch yet?
almost very quickly, I just want to recap some news about the New York Film Critics Circle Awards, or Brian, our Hollywood insider, will throttle me with my own tuxedo bow tie. Killers of the Flower Moon, important news, picked up Best Film and Best Actress for Lily Gladstone, when Christopher Nolan won Best Director for Oppie. On the more indie side, because there was, the supporting performance wins went to Devine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers and Franz Rogowski for Passages, who also, of course, unofficially wins Best Crop Top Sweater, always. My favourite win, however, you'll never guess, Best Animated Feature, The Boy and the Heron. Mia, did you have a favorite?
Oh, well, I was very happy with The Boy and the Heron when I just rewatched it. It is a gorgeous movie, especially in IMAX. But what I really went wee-hee for was when I saw that Celine Song won Best First Film for Past Lives. Oh, that's one of my favorites of the year. And, you know, if you're enjoying Best in Show, you can scroll on down our feed to around June 2023 and you'll see a podcast interview we recorded together way back when Past Lives first came out. And hey, you know what? While you're on your phone, you can check out our award season 2023 to 2024 list on our awards HQ at letterboxd.com/awards. So many awards. I'm so saying it over and over and over again. Awards, awards, awards. But that's where you can check out our full list of the rest of the New York Film Critics Circle winners, which is obsessively hand updated by me. I smiled a lot when I got to write Charles Melton, 2 wins for Best Supporting Actor.
Ha! Well, funny you should say that, because I smiled when I got to read Best Screenplay, Sammy Birch. Woo-hoo! It felt important, Mia, when we were figuring all of this out for this week, it felt important that our first contender chat be with a screenwriter. After all, the WGA was on strike for a very exhaustive 148 days of this year, and that was the second longest strike only to 1998, when they went for 153 days. Luckily, the scheduling stars and the New York Film Critics Circle aligned with our own immaculate tastes for dark, feminine, psychodramatic screenplay. Let's bring Sammy out.
Sammy Birch, welcome to Best in Show. It is so nice to see you again after our very quick red carpet chat last week when I accosted you for your 4 faves. So welcome.
Thank you so much. That was so fun. I was hoping you guys would be there. I love Letterboxd.
Yay.
I really do.
Oh my God. Well, I love May December. I have been beating the May December drum since July. We have living in this part of the world, we're incredibly fortunate in that our film festival gets all the Cannes stuff first. And so then amazing. I get to see things like May December and Anatomy of a Fall and then sit on my hands for like 3 or 4 long months until Mia finally sees it and is like, this is the best film ever. And I'm like, that's what I've been saying.
Yeah, we have been on the hype train like for months. So it's an honor to have you here.
Oh my God.
I had a question about your 4 faves actually. Amadeus, Badlands, Nashville, Hands on a Hard Body. Mm-hmm. Hands on a Hard Body. Have you seen the New Zealand narrative film starring Melanie Lynskey, which is a New Zealand set version of That Competition?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God. It is so,
is it called Hands on a Hard Body?
Show of Hands. It's called Show of Hands.
And what year is this?
2008, written by Anthony McCartan.
I can't believe I've never... So this is about 10 years after the documentary. I'm trying to also place this in Melanie Lynskey's career. I love her. I love her so much. And I also, when the people have asked me, you know, what are my favorite examples of true crime or like where that's done really well, almost the first movie out of my mouth always is Heavenly Creatures.
It's the original true crime film,
right? It is just so... It's such a perfect movie. Everyone's so wonderful in it. I love that they found her in a school, looking grumpy. Like that is just the coolest origin. Funny actress. I love them both. Everything about that movie. I love her. She's so cool.
And then I wanted to litigate another four faves. So you picked Nashville, and I wanted to bring that up because Todd Haynes also chose Nashville when I asked him his four faves.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I wanted to look out for what everybody said. No, we've never talked about that. That is so funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now you have one. And then Julianne picked three women and McCabe and Mrs. Miller. So like everybody was on that Altman train, which that's a good train to be on.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be. You have to be. But that's so funny. How amazing.
This is my amazing segue. Here we go. And then Charles picked Persona, which we are going to have to talk about. There's too much to chat about.
Come on. There is that one Letterboxd review, right? By Christian Jacob Ramon. And it's just
unbelievable.
Persona 2023. Persona. And I spat out my tea. Me too.
Oh, I sent it to all. Yes, because I have been following. I'm telling you, this is a joy to see all these reviews. They're so funny. Some of them are gorgeous. But that one I sent to all the Netflix people. I've posted on Instagram. It was so brilliant because it was just sitting there for anyone to take, and he took it. So I love that.
Christian, you took it. You were first. You get the prize. It's only got 6 likes, this Letterboxd review. I'm like, come on, what is wrong with that?
Wait, no.
You know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to like it from the official Letterboxd crew account.
Yes.
This is going all the way.
What power.
Right
Let's
now.
Get this viral. Let's get Persona viral.
So Todd, so our co-host Brian Formo talked to Todd, who said he couldn't not think of Persona when he first read your script in the clear way that it's such a unique example of a film that pairs these two women and where likenesses are being exchanged. So is that just something everyone's reading into it, or is it something that you and Alex were already fully on board with?
No, I think it's so, I obviously seen Persona and there are these other examples. That's funny. You say Julianne said three women, everything that has then sprung forth from that is so inherent in a film about two women, certainly that are circling each other. And one is an actor, it's influence in this way that is, like, not even like there was no like, oh, I'm gonna rewatch Persona and take notes or something. It wasn't that. It was just, that comes with it. It's just part of that, this heritage down the line, but of course, I mean, it's just one of those essential films,
Yeah. Let's talk some Bergman a little bit. Because I really noticed that your script, and this may be unintentional, but it follows the ABCs of cinema, which are to me Altman, Bergman, Cassavetes. They're all directors who are exploring like layers and identity and masks and all of this. And I remember, not to bring up that carpet again, but when I asked you and your husband/co-story writer Alex for your favorite performance by an actress, you said Shelley Winters in Lolita. He said Jenna Rollins, Opening Night, my favorite movie. And I really noticed that May December has definite elements of both of those films. Like, I can actually kind of picture Natalie's character eventually becoming somebody like Jenna's character, Myrtle Gordon, later in her career. And, since it's my favorite movie, you've seen my tattoo, I am legally bound to ask if and how Jenna's performance in that helped shape your story at all.
I mean, I think that there is just, I mean, that's one of the great, but there are many, thankfully, great performances of women, but also of women playing actors. I think that's a fantastic example. And Sunset Boulevard and, this archetype of the actor, but also, they exist in the world. They're live walking around with us. So I think that I come from a place more of connecting to these characters following where they want to go. This idea of character is plot, is something I was kind of taught.
For the early script writers listening, could you double back and talk a bit more about that? Because I think it feels obvious to a lot of us, but to say something like, character is plot is not obvious to us. Like there are certain Letterboxd reviews you read and you're like, well, hang on a sec, mate. It's not about what happens. It's about who it happens to or who makes it happen.
Yeah. I think I had a teacher early on that said that. And it's just this idea of you can't, the absurdity of like, okay, you said, all right, well, I'm going to do a rewrite. I've written this thing called Streetcar Named Desire. I'm going to do a rewrite and I'm going to really change this woman. You know, she's a totally different person. You know, it's like that's there's like an absurdity to that idea that the story is linked inextricably with who this, you know, Ace in the Hole, the guy that shows up at that moment. That's what the story is. The story wouldn't exist if it was a different reporter. I think there's some, and here's the thing is that I am a little, like I went to school for screenwriting. You know, I do believe to a certain extent you have to learn the rules to know, you know, or you study the great examples of the rules. But I am a little allergic to the way structure can be talked about in this whole world of screenwriting. I think if you're writing Sister Act, you know, which is perfectly structured. I can't even tell you how many times I've watched Sister Act and beat it about.
It's got now action like, in the title. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, things that are very commercial, obviously there are reasons for that or like, you know, you want to write a Pixar movie. I mean, those are like just pristine structurally. But then it's like, you know, I think people get in their head, they get too bogged down by these terms and these charts and these philosophy that it goes against just what is natural in storytelling.
You know so much about screenwriting and screenplays, and this is your very first fully produced feature screenplay. It's not the first you've written, but it's the first that has made it all the way through. And it is, Sammy, it is a dang banger. Like you mm-hmm. are joining, you are joining the pantheon of women like Callie Corey and Diablo Cody, who are two of my personal writing heroes who made me feel like, oh, maybe I could do something like this. So I was just wondering, was there a screenwriter or just a person in your life, really anybody who made you feel like, oh, I can screenwrite. I can do this and I want to do it.
I mean, I think I grew up in Los Angeles and
where is that? I know nothing. What's the main industry there? Yeah. I don't know much about that town.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm very much in the, you know, both my parents are people that came to LA, you know, in the 70s, found the, you know, my mom is a casting director and she it's so funny because she was actually teaching high school. She was a teacher of the deaf and hard of hearing. And she is just such a personality that some guy was like, oh, do you want to be my assistant? Like, I'm a casting director. Do you want to be my casting assistant? And she was like, yeah, I'm really tired of waking up early. You know, she's a little impulsive. So it's miraculous because she found this like very perfect place in the puzzle of what it takes to make a movie that she's just so gifted at. She has cast a lot of really amazing films and now she lives in the Southeast and does local casting there. But my dad worked a lot in development. And so it started when I was like 9 or 10. I'm a child of divorce. And so one of the things that was really smart that I actually do tell people who are getting divorced with kids to do this is that my sister and I would each have separate dinner nights with my dad. So it was like every single Tuesday we went to the same restaurant. We had dinner together, just the two of us, starting that early. And he's a very kind of encyclopedic film person. Like he was like a prodigy little kid in Dallas, like sending away for silent films and like showing them in his garage. And, you know, he's one of those kids. But so it really started there of like, he would pitch to me all the things that writers were pitching to him. And then we'd talk about the structure of them and the, and rank them. And, you know, that really, that started very early in my life. And then, you know, it just kind of grew naturally. I was writing, you know, the plays in high school for my friends to do, and, you know, went to school for screenwriting, and, you know, it just, it did kind of sneak up on me, but I knew that I loved movies, and that was, and I was very much, raised in that kind of home. I mean, that's the closest, I think, to religion that, existed in the home, is just this sort of reverence for movies and for this kind of industry. You know, it was just very, that was the sun. But yeah, I mean, as for like screenwriters that I looked up to, it's all over the place, but certainly, you know, the big ones, Charlie Kaufman and Paddy Chayefsky, and, you know, these guys that, you know, also, you know, some of the great playwrights of transition, like Peter Schaefer, and Herb Gardner is one of my favorite voices. And, you know, that's kind of what happened.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, just while we're in your childhood, we have a question that we ask everyone on this show. Very, very important.
Okay.
What is the first prize or award or medal or trophy for anything that you won or remember winning?
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. Okay. Well, so I'm not athletic at all. So I was never on a team or did anything like that. So I the first thing that's really coming to mind was at high school graduation. There was at our school, it was called the Gary David Goldberg Award, who created Family Ties. And so it was his wife was one of the founders of the school. And so there were, you know, it was kind of like there were academic awards, and then there was this one for like, I guess, I don't know if it was writing specifically or just it was like the creative award, the creative plaque or something. So it wasn't a big school. It was a small group, but I did win that. That's the first thing I can think of that, you know, physically I held in my hand.
What's wonderful about that is it's so relevant to what you're doing now, whereas most people who come on the show, like Sean Fennessy last week, was like, I won a science prize for developing the most nutritious meal. But to bring it all back to Melanie Linsky, when we asked her, she was like, embarrassingly, the first prize I ever won was Best Actress at the New Zealand Film Awards.
Amazing. That's so funny.
Go, girl. So also speaking of your growing up, you know, this May, December, my God, what an amazing blend of that 90s horrendous tabloid culture and the, you know, the mid-2010s, and here we are deep in this never-ending true crime trend.
Yes.
And just how you bring both of those cultural phenomena together in this one story. Is that like those tabloids, do you have specific memories of reading them and, you know, in the waiting room of your mother's casting agency or?
Well, there was honestly only in talking about the movie have I kind of made this funny connection of just how local some of that felt, because, you know, obviously the Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman murder scene was right around where I grew up. The Monica Lewinsky was from the same area and would walk around with these like big sun hats. So it's like, see her on Sam Asini. And OJ was big in our house too. Like my mom was very obsessed with that trial and went, she was one of those people that would go down and try and get in and see it. It's done at the courthouse. So I was also not, it was like the day of the verdict. I had to carpool with someone because she like, it was like, I'm not taking you to school. Like, we're not going to miss the verdict. You know, it's some kind of, it's a little heightened tabloid personal history. But I think it was just everywhere, you know, it was just so everywhere. And then the way we've been going down the line, I mean, I think someone was going to make this story in a literal retelling. I mean, they might still, but it certainly these heavy hitters, these big ones, it seems like we're kind of picking them back up and reevaluating them, sometimes for the better, sometimes maybe not.
I'm thinking obviously of I Tonya, right? Which
I Tonya,
brilliant, just such a brilliant job of asking us as an audience and as readers of those magazines and watchers of those stories to reevaluate what we think about women.
For sure. And Monica.
I was just going to segue because that was a perfect segue opportunity. I had to jump on it because it was about asking. One thing I really love about May December is its ambiguity and this refusal to give hard answers and like a neatly tied up happily ever after conclusion. And it's trusting its audience to engage in that gray area, like Natalie's character is repeatedly emphasizing, because it's not about answering. It's more about the asking. So I was wondering, like, why is the asking just more interesting than the answering, like in your own point of view?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it always is, but especially in situations like this, you know, obviously this is a fictionalized version of a famous case, but it's so complicated. It's mm-hmm. so complicated. And I think that some people maybe misunderstand or bristle at that idea because they are assuming, I mean, was it right or wrong? You know, like a binary of that. Ugh, and that's really
that is
not
just so not what it's about.
Yeah. it's more that it's emotionally complicated. It's hard to work through, especially in situations which I'm sure has happened many, many times outside of the tabloid eye and probably most of the time of the gender swapped, of when children are involved, of what once that's created, once so many years have gone by. You know, it's not black and white as far as being able to go, oh, okay, I see this clearly. I'm going to, you know, move on and in whatever way possible. I think that element is incredibly complicated, especially when dealing with people that refuse to look at themselves as Gracie is either willfully not able to or physically not able, psychologically not able to. That I think we can't know exactly. But the ripples effect of that, of how emotional and complicated for the people involved, and then these other layers of how foolhardy really it is, as, you know, Natalie's character coming in to try and understand something so she can put it in this little 90-minute retelling for me as the writer, for Todd as the director, for the audience. Like there's this impossibility really getting to the truth to mine it for fiction. But then it's also, I certainly think that, as you say, it's leaving a lot up to the viewer. I don't want to spoon feed anyone anything. And that's, I don't like that feeling either as an audience member. So there's questions, both while you're experiencing it. I think those are very prevalent of the way you kind of shift back and forth and how it physically feels, in multiple ways. But then afterwards, you know, I think there is a lot of room to have discussion.
I think we both agree, and we know you have to go. You've got a million other people to talk to in the beginning of a very long awards season that I hope goes really well for you. So I just want to finish, speaking of audiences, with this Letterboxd review by Josiah Morgan, just sharing this with you. I love the way this is derived from key ancestors Hitchcock and De Palma and Lynch, operating as a film that makes the audience its victim, Note that we become stand-ins for Charles Melton's victim. Eventually, both predators turn their gaze on us.
That's beautiful. I love Letterboxd. I'll say it again. I really do.
We love May December.
Yes.
May December is on Netflix now in the US, but for UK listeners like Ella and George, it's just landed on Sky Cinema, which acquired the film way back in 2021. And in other regions, it's not even in cinemas until February next year. But as we know, not everyone watches an awards contender in the year it comes out anyway, which is why we have this final segment of the show, Winner, Winner, Chicken Run Dinner, in which we revisit historical awards winners we've seen recently. So, what have we all been watching? Let's kick it off with Ella.
Well, Mia, I revisited an all-time fave the other week. I rewatched Broadcast News, which, you know, just any time of year, it's... I would also say that I have never sort of clocked that it is part of any awards conversation, you know, past at all. I just, like, if you told me that it had won 10 Oscars, I'd be like, cool. And if you told me that it was never nominated for anything, I'd be like, cool. It just, I don't need it to be anything, yeah. You know, except what it is. I think, we'd rewatched, Tom and I watched the Albert Brooks documentary, Defending My Life. Yes. And you know when you just see a tiny segment from a film you love and it's just like, I need so little excuse to rewatch it. And I rewatched it and it's still perfect. I would nominate it for 16 biffers and I would award it 16 biffers. It's not British, but doesn't matter. I love it.
Deserves. I mean, it swept the New York Film Critics Circle Awards. It won Best Film, Best Director, Best Actor for Jack Nicholson, Actress for Holly Hunter, Screenplay for James L. Brooks, and well-deserved. I love that movie. Excellent pick, Ella. George, what have you been watching?
So I recently went to a screening at the Prince Charles Cinema. Quick shout out to them. Best cinema in London. If you want to watch, you know, restorations or screenings of things that you've never seen before that you've missed. 2001, A Space Odyssey, which I am just going to fully come out and say I had never seen before. And I was ashamed that it took me this long because the amount of films that I love that are so clearly 2001 coded is long. Like, I'm a huge Arrival person. I've seen that movie so many times. And my partner, who's not really like that immersed in the film world, had seen it, and I'd showed him films like Arrival and he'd been like, why haven't you seen 2001? Like, this makes zero sense. So I felt it was time to rectify that imminently. And wow, I mean, everyone's correct about that film.
What is there even to say? I mean, it's just like, it's such a 5-star perfect movie.
Oh yeah. I also think that there's some power in being late to these things. Like, I'm gonna really back myself there because I watched 2001, A Space Odyssey, days before I watched Full Circle, All of Us Strangers, and I could not get the monolith out of my brain when we were having these long lingering shots of the apartment building that is so lonely and terrifying and unknowable and big and black and scary. And I was just like, wow, I don't know if it had been a long time since I'd seen 2001. Maybe I wouldn't have made this connection. But it just felt so right having those back to back.
Yeah, 2001 just pops up in everything from All of Us Strangers to SpongeBob SquarePants. References to it
to Barbie.
Are everywhere. Yeah, to Barbie, truly. Oh my God. Well, thank you so much, Ella and George. I'll let you get to bed now since it's getting late over there and you stayed up past your bedtime.
We did. It's a rare thing.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to chat.
Bye from Biffa. Biffa, good
Biffa. Good Biffa, bye.
Big Biffas.
Good Biffa, exactly. Bye. Well, I'll say good Biffa, goodbye.
This is going to catch on.
Yeah. Good Biffa, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh my God, I'm pressing stop. Thank you so much for listening to Best in Show, a limited award season series brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. We would love for you to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts to help spread the word to other award season obsessives that this is where the great conversations are, all the way past the Letterboxd Year in Review and into the 96th Academy Awards.
We have our awards HQ on Letterboxd. Letterboxd.com awards. Follow us there, and all of us individually, we're on there too. You can find our little faces under the crew part of the HQ. Don't forget to send us your awards season questions. Email podcast@letterboxd.com. All category questions are welcome. We've got a couple banked. We're going to go full mailbag very, very soon. Thanks to our crew, Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the music, Ella, George and Tom for their biffer coverage, Slim for making us sound amazing, and Sophie Shin for production.
And Brian Formo, our awards king for overall producing. Wish you could be here. Finally, you for listening. Best in Show is a Tape Deck production.